A reading from Numbers 6, 22 to 27. I think this will sound familiar. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, 'Thus you shall bless the Israelites, and you shall say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make God's face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up God's countenance upon you and give you peace.' And so, they shall put my name on the Israelites, and I will bless them." The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
When you walked out this morning to get the newspaper, did you see a rainbow? We did. It was amazing. We saw a beautiful rainbow arcing over our neighborhood. It was just luminous. It just kept going. In fact, I was out there getting the paper, and the paper guy came by. He opened his door, came out, and joined me. We were out there taking pictures together at the rainbow at like 6 in the morning or something. It was just gorgeous to look at the rainbow up there. Ironically, it was just kind of strange to me that as I went out and saw this glorious rainbow, a few minutes previous to that, I had been listening to a radio program talking about the Stonewall riots back in 1969. And I was thinking, this is God's sign, right? This is God's hope out there, reminding us that we've gone some ways to be more including of our LGBTQ brothers and sisters, but we haven't quite gone far enough. And then I thought of a friend of mine that I went to seminary with. He went to 3 years of seminary, passed his ordination exams, has had extraordinary gifts for ministry, but in his senior year of seminary, had this self-realization that he was gay, and the church wasn't quite ready for him yet. And so my friend has never experienced the church as it is today, the Presbyterian Church, USA. It was kind of a longing inside of me. So I see that rainbow as a sign for him, for our LGBT community, and for all of us. Let us receive this blessing, a Jewish blessing. O God, bless your people with wise and feeling hearts. You have given us the freedom to choose between good and evil, life and death. May we choose life and good, that our children may inherit from us the blessings of dignity and freedom, prosperity and peace. And let the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts here be acceptable in your sight, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. I can count the number of times, or really, I can't count. I'm going to have to start again because I can count. I can't count the number of times that I have awoken in the morning after sleeping on the hard and uneven ground, wrestled out of my sleeping bag, faced a kind of a cup of oatmeal that's somewhat cold and some freeze-dried coffee to fortify myself, gone back, kind of cleaned up my wet tent, packed it into my pack, slung it over my back, and headed down the trail. Have any of you done that? Are you going to do it again? Let me ask you that question. Okay, good. Sometimes it's hard to get going in the morning on a long hike like that, whether it's 10 miles or 20 miles or 200 miles. I've done that several times. And of course, what goes into that moment when you have to get everything ready and get going is a lot of pre-planning. You have to do a lot of logistics before you even get to that point. And sometimes when you're getting ready to go on a long hike or who knows, a car trip, but mostly a long hike, you just have to think through these things. Let's see, did I pack moleskin? Did I bring rain gear? Did I bring a deck of cards? You always have to bring a deck of cards, by the way, when you go hiking. Who am I hiking with? Do I trust the person I'm hiking with? Will I get lost? Do I have a plan B if things go south? Did I bring a map? All these things kind of go into that pre-trip planning to address all those worries and concerns. And yet, I'll tell you, when I'm about a mile down the trail, after getting ready and planning and getting everything together, when I'm about a mile down the trail, I find myself making peace. Making peace with all the things that I brought with me, which might be too much stuff, and all the stuff I forgot. You just have to let go, right? You've done your best job of packing and planning, and then you just have to let go. Numbers 6, 22 to 27, is a blessing that comes in the middle of people preparing to go somewhere. They're packing, they're planning, they're figuring out logistics, and here comes this blessing in the midst of it. They're getting ready for an arduous trip, a long trip northward to the Promised Land. Old Testament scholars agree that Numbers and Leviticus was composed at a time when the Hebrew children had just got out of Egypt. They had just fled from Pharaoh, they had crossed the Red Sea, and now they were camping at the base of Mount Sinai. And there, they stayed for 9 months, planning, preparing, getting ready to go on an arduous 40-year hike toward the Promised Land. For 9 months, the priests got together. While everyone was packing, here's my image, while everybody's packing and getting ready, here are these priests. And you know what they're doing? They're making up rules to get along. That's what they're doing. If you go back and look at Leviticus and Numbers, some of these laws may seem tedious and overly scrupulous, like laws governing hand washing and sacrifices, and there's a lot of laws in there that are demeaning to women. There's a lot of archaic laws in there. But I think what the priests had in mind for these people who are going to go traveling together is some rules for the road, some laws for the road. In essence, they were asking the question, how will we respect God and one another and just keep moving forward? That was the question back then. How do we respect one another, respect God, and keep moving forward? That's the question they dealt with. I think it's the question that the church still deals with. I know this was my father's concern when we were kids. After getting ready for a big trip and packing all our belongings into our family Rambler. Anyone have a Rambler? Okay. You don't see many Ramblers today. So it was a Rambler station wagon. After packing us all in there and putting his three kids in the back seat, my dad would reach back and draw imaginary lines. He set up kind of imaginary countries in which we could dwell. And of course, being rambunctious kids, we were always testing these borders to see if our dad was telling, was meaning what he said. Imagine 600,000 people, 600,000 gathering at the base of Mount Sinai, getting ready to move northward. There will be challenges along the way. There will be detours. There will be hostile encounters with the natives. There will be doubts. There will be drought. There will be hunger. Indeed, along the way, about 20 years into it, someone will begin to have doubts that they shouldn't have ever started this trip in the first place. Egypt is looking good after 20 years of walking in the wilderness. On such a long trip, it's hard to be patient, isn't it? We may have planned and packed. We may know all the stops along the way, but it doesn't make it any easier. Sometimes it's just long. It's tiring. On a long journey, we get tired and hungry and thirsty, and sometimes we get tired of playing by the rules. That's why I think there are so many speeding tickets out there. We get tired of playing by the rules. And when we get lost, or we get frustrated, or the way is unclear, we start to blame our leaders. We're not sure we believe in them anymore. It's just hard to keep going forward sometimes. Like the Hebrew children experienced, walking toward the Promised Land, walking year after year, yearning for home, it's hard to keep faith and keep going. When I was writing this sermon, I was writing it down at Grit Coffee down in the mall. That's my favorite place to sit down on a Friday morning and work on my sermon. And as I was writing it, thinking about this blessing and thinking about the Hebrews and their struggles and the journey they were taking, I looked up and there was a press conference or a press release happening right across the hall. Right across the hall from Grit Coffee is a TV studio, a television studio. And this studio was filling up with police officers and press and dignitaries. And then I saw a group of people standing in front of a kind of blue curtains, and someone came forward to make an announcement. The police chief, or the acting police chief, announced that the investigation and the search for Sage Smith was still going on. Sage, sometimes known as Deshaud, went missing back in 2012. She'd be 26 years old today. They talked about searching for Sage. They said, you know, don't forget about Sage. And then one of the family members got up. Deshaud's brother, Deshaud's sister, got up and made a tearful plea for the people of Charlottesville and the world that they not give up searching for Sage. And then Sage's mom got up and said, you know, don't worry about pronouns. It's not a time to argue about pronouns regarding Deshaud or Sage. He's still my son and he's still missing. You know, 7 years is a long time, isn't it? 7 years waiting for closure for your child is a long time. 7 years of walking around in the wilderness is difficult with no clear answers. And so I want us to be praying for Sage and Sage's family this morning, even to send a blessing their way. Sometimes the trip is long. 7 years, 40 years. I want to tell you one more thing about our family vacations or these family trips in the old Rambler. After my dad packed us in and drew the lines and we were just pulling out of the driveway, my mother would often reach over and put her hand on his, and she would say something like, "And may God keep us safe." My mom always gave a blessing just before we started out. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord's face shine upon you. The Lord be kind and gracious unto you and give you peace. This is the blessing that we read in Numbers 6. It is a blessing for beginnings. I know oftentimes we hear this blessing in a benediction in the Christian church. We hear it at the very end of a sacred ceremony, a worship service, a memorial, a wedding. But really, it's meant for the beginning of something, when you start out on a journey. It's a simple blessing, a priestly blessing, easy to memorize. Maybe you'll want to memorize it. It's complete in itself. It's a Jewish blessing. It's what Jewish parents say to their children as they go off to school or go out into the world. It's being said right now somewhere around the globe, in a synagogue or on the street. It's been repeated for hundreds of years. It's said at the beginning of the Shabbat. Every Shabbat in a Jewish household begins with this blessing, a going out, a beginning. And so when you strike camp and you're ready to go somewhere, it's what you say as you hit the road, as you just start down the trail. This week, in studying this blessing, I had an aha moment. I had an insight I hadn't thought about before. It came when I read an article by Rabbi Shai Held, who is a rabbi up in New York City. Rabbi Held reflects on this particular blessing in this way. We are not sources, but channels of blessing. We do not create the goodness we bestow, but rather we pass it on. Good parents know that the love they shower on their child is not ultimately something they made themselves, and that love is a manifestation of divine grace. Thus, the parent's task is not to manufacture love, but to pass it on. That made a lot of sense to me. Rabbi Held is saying that when you bless someone, you first have to love them. When you hold your hand up and you put your hand on their shoulder, when you bless someone and send them out with your blessing, you have to love them. Held adds, blessing depends on love. And if that's true, the priest who does not love the people or is not loved by the people should not raise his, her, or their hands to bless them. This blessing we've been talking about for the last three Sundays has a lot to do with love. That's why I read the book today. In offering a blessing, we send someone to school or out into the world to continue on their journey with God's love. We send our love, the love we've experienced with people around us. Because just like the story I inferred and read and summarized this morning, it's not luck you'll need. It's not luck you'll need going out into the world. You will need love. The community's love. God's love. The other night, Friday night, I went to the softball game. Some of you were there. Westminster Presbyterian Church has a softball team. You're welcome to come. This is a shameless advertisement. You can come Fridays. We'd love to see you there. But last Friday night, it was a beautiful evening. Again, there was a wonderful rainbow out in the outfield. Parents and grandparents and children and sons and daughters gathered to play this game. The Catholics and the Presbyterians took the field. I always think it's kind of an ecumenical moment when we can play together, right? Play by some rules, but play together. It was enjoyable. People laughed. They talked. The injured wished they could play. The players gave out generous high fives. It's just hard to describe the feeling. Before the first pitch, of course, the players gathered with the umpire at home plate to receive a prayer. And then it followed by play ball by the umpire. But there was just something more going on. It was a blessing. It was a blessing to be with joyous people. We won the game. That didn't help. I mean, it didn't hurt. Right?
Yeah.
But still, it was a blessing. Remember, when you go out to play, when you go out to explore, to seek, to find, to lose, it won't be luck you'll need, but you will need love.